looks like it might rain soon, so I need to hurry up with the intro today. Incidentally, this lake is actually made from recycled rainwater, but the birds don't seem to mind. Regardless of the weather, being out by the water, or by nature in general, always inspires me and helps me to be creative. I'm reminded of the ancient Greeks, who subscribed to the idea of goddesses of inspiration, which they believed inspired them in song, dance, poetry, and the arts, and on whose mercy the creativity, wisdom, and insight of all artists and thinkers depended. They were considered the source of the knowledge embodied in poetry, song lyrics, and myths that were relayed orally for centuries in ancient Greek culture. Of course, I'm talking about the Muses, who were invoked by ancient authors when writing hymns or epic history, as the invocation would occur near the beginning of their work, asking them for inspiration or inviting them to simply sing or write directly through the author. The Muses are extremely important figures in Greek mythology. Poets like Homer and Hesiod did not forget to pay homage to them in their main works, believing that their inspiration depended on these deities' blessings with which they could produce their magnum opus, such as Iliad and the Odyssey, and this is one of the reasons why they were known as inspirational Muses. The Muses were most commonly portrayed as the nine beautiful daughters of Zeus, and as primary sources of inspiration, as with the god Apollo, who was also the god of music, who adored the company of these beautiful Muses, feeling exhilarated and moved by them whenever he was writing his greatest songs. Some artists of ancient Greece prayed and even offered sacrifices to the Muses in an effort to benefit from their influence, in hopes that their works of art could become true masterpieces. In the beginning, the Muses were worshipped as virgins and pure women, but as the centuries went by, the chastity of the Muses vanished, and the formal worship of these deities was lost. That said, even today, there are artists that hope to feel the touch of their own muse. What is it about an attractive or intriguing woman that turns an ordinary man into a creative whirlwind? What magical process enables him to invent, to sculpt, to paint, to write, or to compose a masterpiece out of thin air simply by concentrating on the object of his desire? For an artist, the muse is one of the most important relationships he can have, providing a focus that he can create images and dreams around. A muse might be a lover, a friendly infatuation, or maybe even a stranger the artist never even speaks to. The muse acts as an external force of our creative life energy, something external to us on which we can focus and seek. Although the source lies within, the inner is reflected in the outer, and the muse is the reflection externally. In seeking and obtaining the muse, we find the source within ourselves. Sappho was a female poet who lived around 600 BC on the Greek island of Lesbos. She is best known for her poems, though most of her poetry is now lost and survives only in fragmentary form. Besides being from a wealthy family, very little is known about her life. The names of both of her parents are uncertain, but her poetry was well known and greatly admired through much of antiquity, even up until this day. In fact, some of her same-sex poetry, particularly between women, was so influential that the island of Lesbos, where she lived, is what inspired our modern term for lesbian. This is one of the earliest surviving images of Sappho, from 470 BC. She is shown standing next to Alcaeus, another poet and a contemporary of Sappho. Now that we know what she looks like, let's listen to some of her poetry, shall we?
Hymn to Aphrodite. Daughter of Zeus and immortal, Aphrodite, serene weaver of spells, at thy portal, hear me and slay not, O queen. As in the past, hither to me from thy far palace of gold, drawn by the doves that o'erflew me, come as thou camest of old. That man, whoever he may be, who sits awhile to gaze on thee, hearing thy lovely laugh, thy speech, throned with the gods, he seems to me. I have a daughter, Cleis fair, poised like a golden flower in the air. Lydian treasures her limbs outshine. Cleis, beloved one, Cleis mine.
In the 3rd century BC, the Greek scholars working at the Great Library of Alexandria produced a standard text for all of Sappho's poems that was divided into at least 8 books. Many scholars believe that the collection probably contained 9 books for the 9 muses. Today, less than 700 lines of Sappho's poetry exist.
Moonlight. The stars around the fair moon fade against the night. When gazing full, she fills the glade and spreads the seas with silvery light. What country maiden charms thy heart, however fair, however sweet, who has not learned by gracious art to draw her dress around her feet?
Most of Sappho's poems addressed with great affection the young ladies that lived on her island. Because of this, she's been labeled as a symbol of love and desire between women. Of course, another consideration was that she ran some sort of finishing school for girls who were in training to be the companions of men, and the poems could be seen as a sort of ancient marketing tool targeted towards the male elite and nobility of the ancient Mediterranean. In any event, as few others in Western civilizations have, she stands shoulder to shoulder with such greats as Shakespeare and Keats, exploring with her poems the intensity of emotion surrounding love. Many critics, especially after antiquity, condemned her for unnatural passions, but based on her poetry, it seems evident that she's not simply fascinated with the girls, but with feeling the depths of despair and heights of ecstasy that love brings. As a consequence of this narrow-mindedness, history has also been unkind to her work, most of which is now lost. What has survived consists mostly of incomplete fragments, probably due to bias. This failure to preserve her poetry is, simply put, one of the most horrendous blunders in all of literary history.
Dead shalt thou lie forever and forgotten, for whom the flowers of song have never bloomed, a wanderer amidst the unbegotten, in Hades' house, a shadow I entombed.
Her attitudes towards love attracted a great deal of attention, both positive and negative. It is perhaps as an icon of the erotic that Sappho has been best known. That said, in antiquity and in modern times, there have been those who enthusiastically applauded her celebration of physical love and of the bittersweet fragility of life in general.
Death is an evil, for the gods choose breath. Had death been good, the gods had chosen death. Love. All delicacy unto me is lovely, and for me, O love, thy wings are as the midday fire, thy splendor as the sun above.
Speaking of the sun, like the Titan Helios, Apollo is also the god of the sun and of sunlight, as well as of poetry, music, dance, prophecy, and knowledge. In places like Delphi, Apollo was known as the Muse Leader, after the sites were rededicated to his cult around the 8th century BC. The cult of the Muses was also commonly connected to that of Apollo. One of the most important and complex of the Greek gods, he is the son of Zeus and Leto, and the twin brother of Artemis, goddess of the hunt. Seen as the most beautiful god, and often depicted as a beardless, athletic youth, he was the patron deity of Delphi, and therefore an oracular god, the prophetic deity of the Delphic Oracle. I already covered the Oracle of Delphi in a prior videos, but the importance of prophecy can't be understated in ancient religion, because altered trance-like states of consciousness were a vital part of the mystery religions, where direct access to the gods was allegedly available, and this communion with divinity was at the center of the cult's ritualistic activities. Medicine and healing are also associated with Apollo, and at Delphi, he was venerated as the slayer of the monstrous serpent Python. Apollo's sister Artemis is the equivalent of the Roman goddess Diana, and was the Greek goddess of the wilderness, the hunt, wild animals, chastity, and the moon.
The moon has set beyond the seas, and vanished are the Pleiades. Half the long weary night has gone. Time passes, yet I lie alone. I spoke with Aphrodite in a dream. Come to me, O ye graces, delicate, tender, fair. Come from your heavenly places, muses with golden hair. Thy form is lovely, and thine eyes are honeyed. O'er thy face the pale clear light of love lies like a veil. Bidding thee rise with outstretched hands, before thee Aphrodite stands. Upon thy girlfriend's white and tender breast, sleep thou, and on her bosom find thy rest.
In antiquity, Zappo was sometimes referred to as the poetess, just as Homer was called the poet. Plato hailed her as the 10th muse, and she was honored on coins and on civic statuary. And while her love poems are repeatedly praised as spontaneous, simple, direct, and honest, and in many ways paradigm-changing for her time and culture, one can't help but wonder what her influences were. I like to imagine that she was somehow inspired by poetry from many millennia before her own time that is now lost to the ages. Well, not totally lost. I'll leave you with an excerpt of a 4,000-year-old Sumerian poem, Inanna's Descent to the Netherworld. From the great above, she opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, the goddess opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, Inanna opened her ear to the great below. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. I enjoy making these videos. Please check out my books published on Amazon.com. Species with Amnesia, Our Forgotten History. Gods with Amnesia, Subterranean Worlds of Inner Earth. The Occult Secrets of Vril. And 1666, Redemption Through Sin.
If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those that are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you. As always, I look forward to reading your comments, so please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.